Hey there, and thanks for checking out episode 85 of the Eyes Free Sports Podcast. My name is Greg Lindberg. Here on this episode, our topic of discussion is tennis for the blind and visually impaired. And to help us talk about this great sport, we have a fantastic guest who has been involved in blind tennis for a number of years now and sheds some light on tennis for the blind around the world and also here in the US. So let's hit the tennis court now, get out the racket, take a swing, and get swinging now with episode 85. Okay, so here on this episode of Eyes Free Sports, we are chatting with Samir Mahir, who is the president of the International Blind Tennis Association. Samir, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Greg. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Super excited to dive into tennis here. I think we briefly touched on it on the podcast over the last couple years, but really have not dove, deep into tennis. So really excited to finally talk some tennis and hit the court here.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Okay. So first off, Samir, why don't you just kind of introduce yourself as far as your personal and professional background?
I'm currently the president of the International Blind Tennis Association. And it's our first term as a committee. We started basically a few years back, and very honored to be able to lead such a great organization. My professional background and personal background, I grew up in Morocco and then got the opportunity to play tennis a little bit there. We played a lot on red clay, and then moved to Europe for a university, played tennis a little bit in France, and then got the opportunity to move to the US because of very, very nice lady I met in France. Actually, she's my wife. We've been married for a long time now. So I think it's her fault if I'm here in the US now, or I've been traveling all over the world. I've been involved in tennis really for over 20 years. Professionally, I was mainly working in technology sector at IBM and other organizations. But my love for tennis has been since I was a teenager, and worked also with a few governing bodies of tennis, the U.S. Tennis Association and Tennis Australia as well. So I had the opportunity to work very closely with some great organizations that really invest and promote and develop the sport in their countries and worldwide.
Right, right. Very interesting. And I know you did mention to me that you are yourself fully sighted. So I'm definitely curious how you kind of learned about, adaptive sports for the blind and visually impaired, and then got involved.
Yes. The current International Blind Tennis Association Executive Committee is comprised of sighted and visually impaired members. Personally, I discovered blind tennis in Australia. I lived there for about 11 years or so. I just moved back to the US a few months ago, just last summer. I had the opportunity to work for an organization called Vision Australia. As you probably heard, it's the largest charity or nonprofit organization that provides services to blind and low vision people in Australia. After working with the Tennis Australia, I basically had an opportunity to work for them. And it turns out they had a blind sports office within the same building. So I was very curious because of my sports background. And I went in there and just curious about blind sports in general. I knew about adaptive tennis in other areas, like deaf and hearing impaired, wheelchair, and so on.
Sure.
Never heard about blind sports. So I went in there, got a chance to meet a very interesting gentleman. His name is Morris Gleason. He is the president of the Blind Sports Recreation Victoria, which is the largest blind sports organization in the state of Victoria in Australia. And basically he told me we need volunteers. If you're interested, why don't you come in on Friday, and we'll be glad to get your help if you're interested in sport. I said, yes, tennis. I'd love to be involved in tennis, but I'm not sure about tennis. This is 2016 for blind tennis. So I just went in there, and that experience that day, I think it was a Friday, they had a program every every Friday for 2 hours or 2.5 hours. Changed my perception about the sport in general, my thinking about adaptive sports, and really my journey started there with the blind tennis.
Wow. So you were pretty much hooked kind of right off the bat, right?
Absolutely. Again, blind and visually impaired tennis has been around for many years. It was founded by a Japanese player, Mr. Take, in 1984, really. So he invented the blind tennis board. He just, he lost his sight at a very early age, I think. And he started his journey because he wanted to play, tennis in high school. So he started experimenting with plastic baseballs first, and then with small kind of lead bearings inside, and then started, really going through the whole invention process, really. But in 1988, he really technically is founded the sport in Japan, and it's been basically been, played all over the world almost now. Which is great.
Wow. But still a fairly, relatively new sport compared to, say, goalball or obviously some of the other sports that have been around, many generations, still relatively new, right?
It is in a sense, I would say a new sport, but I think the progress that we've seen the last, 10 years or so has been amazing. Obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic impacted everybody and impacted a lot of blind, visually impaired tennis all over the world. But I think there's a lot of great opportunities to get the community and that segment of the population involved in sports in general and in tennis in particular.
Right. No question about that. So before we do get into how the game actually works, the rules, kind of the nitty gritty, which I'm really excited about, let's just kind of start with the IBTA, the International Blind Tennis Association. You want to just kind of give an overview of that organization and then specifically your role as president?
Sure. Again, as a president, I'm leading the board from the governance side. We have executive committee members who have specific roles ranging from the secretary to head of each discipline, whether it's technical, medical, and so on, finance, etc. But the International Blind Tennis Association basically was founded to regulate the sport of blind visually impaired tennis. We basically had a gap in our industry, in our tennis industry a few years back, and a few very dedicated people got together and founded the organization. I'll give you more information about that. But think of the IBTA as the international governing body of blind and visually impaired tennis. We work closely with different organizations and tennis federations, governing bodies internationally. It's a consortium of bunch of not-for-profits sports organizations and associations from over, I would say, 18 countries, actually up to 20 countries now.
Oh,
and
wow.
our mission is straightforward. We want to advance, promote, and manage international tennis activities for blind, visually impaired players to help increase participation of our sport worldwide.
Gotcha. Very interesting. And is it primarily Europe or Asia or, kind of the Oceania, Australia, New Zealand, where tennis, blind tennis is more so popular, would you say? Or?
We have actually blind tennis in Latin America. We have blind tennis in Asia Pacific, with Australia, with Singapore, South Korea. Europe is fairly advanced with many countries. Such as the UK, Spain, Italy, Ireland, Poland, and others. We are also starting, we had a great news lately where we have the first U.S. Blind Tennis Association founded here in the U.S. A few months ago. Based in Pittsburgh, led by my colleague, in fact, Dana Costa, who's the president of the USPTA, and she's also on the executive committee of the International Blind Tennis Association. So we have some great people involved in all over the world, we hope to grow even more.
Right. Yeah, that is super exciting to hear that, you know, things are kind of formally getting started here in the U.S. as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a great market for the sport. The U.S. Tennis Association is also involved now, and it's a priority for the USTA as far as having adaptive tennis on the forefront and providing opportunities to as many people as possible and basically to everyone to get involved in tennis. And I think the U.S. is a great opportunity to help that growth of the game. I think it's going to be one of the leaders eventually in our sport.
Absolutely. So let's dive into the actual sport, the game itself, in terms of, you know, the tennis ball, the racket, the court. And I'm definitely curious about kind of all the unique adaptations of blind tennis.
Yes. So the blind tennis is obviously adaptive tennis. So we have to adapt the court to and also the ball and also the rules. Right. So from a ball perspective, we play actually all tennis. The tennis ball is a foam ball. It's an audible ball. So it basically rattles when it bounces. And it's important, as you know, for blind, low vision people to be able to hear that sound. So the rules are adapted for each category or site, what we call site classification. The classifications are basically these categories in sport, like similar to the Paralympics. They range from B1, B2, B3, B4. So B1 is basically, where a player is totally blind, and then it goes up based on sight, on the eye condition, right? So from a court dimension, they think of it as the red ball, yellow ball, and green ball of junior tennis. The courts actually are a smaller court. They're adjusted based on the site classification of each players, and the rackets as well. The rackets are not the standard rackets that we adult rackets that you can use. We use the 26 and the 23 and 26 inch rackets. The players actually like that because it gives them more control on the ball, especially in the lower classification. So the B1, B2, they like having shorter rackets because they kind of have this technique of scooping. They scoop the ball. So after each bounce, the bounce as well, the number of bounces is different. So the B1 and B2 category are allowed 3 bounces. And the B3 and B4 category allowed only 2 bounces. So that's and something, in fact, in B1, sometimes most of them use just 1 bounce because they can still play after 1 bounce. So those are the, in general, the rules and the adaptive rules that are used in tennis. We're still looking into ways to improve the rules, make it more flexible, if you will. With our technical committee, we're looking into ways to also address the what we call the kind of borderline classification based on your eyesight condition. You may be very close to one or the other based on the classification category. So we're looking into ways also to combine, to grow participation where people can play doubles from different levels, but also different classifications to really make it more flexible as well and promote participation.
Right. Interesting. And then as far as the court, is there some kind of, are there some kind of tactile markings on the court as well?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. So we use tactile lines, for the courts, for a simple reason, really, as you know, for people who are blind, or have low vision, to position themselves and to, also know where they are at any point of the court, on the court. They use sometimes their feet, their racket to touch the lines so they can position themselves. Some of them actually use their hands to go down and touch the line, the corner, so they can position themselves to return serve or to serve. It's amazing actually to see players getting used to that and moving and memorizing their position as well. But the tactile lines were very important in their position on the court, especially when they're playing points. You know, they have to return each side of the court, so it's important to have those tactile lines.
Right. Interesting. I'm also curious, as far as shoes, do you recommend, you know, aside from kind of the standard tennis shoe, any special shoes or footwear?
No, the shoes typically are very standard tennis shoes. There's no difference from regular tennis at all, right? So because of the courts that we're playing on are standard courts, you know, so I don't know. There's nothing specific about the shoes, as long as they're tennis shoes, comfortable shoes. No issue there at all.
Right. Gotcha. Let's talk a little more about, you know, tournaments, where tournaments have been played. I know you mentioned Tokyo was kind of the, Japan, you know, in general was kind of the main genesis of blind tennis, so to speak. But where exactly are tournaments held? How often are they held? What types of tournaments are out there?
Just a quick background, by the way. Another sport was founded in Japan, but just to go back on the history part, the IBTA, the International Blind Tennis Association, was actually founded in the U.S.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So in 2014, many countries got together, and in McAllen, Texas, close to Mission, Texas, so if you heard before, but it was February 2014 when the organization had its first International Blind Tennis Congress. And that's where they basically ratified the agreement and created the International Blind Tennis Association. And representatives were from I think 13 countries back then. So, and they had events in McAllen, Texas, and also in Reynosa, Mexico, just across the border, where they have like a friendly exhibition and things like that. So just that's on the history side. Of course, Japan is the founding country. They led the sport in many aspects, I would say, especially on the event competition side. They had many tournaments before everybody else. In 1990, the first ever tournament for the visually impaired was held, obviously, in Japan. And the founder of blind tennis, Mr. Miyoshi Take, God bless his soul, because he passed away in 2011. He was actually a national champion for, I think, 16 times over 21-year span. And his long-term dream and legacy goal, basically, was to continue growing, become a Paralympic sport. Right. So that's one important thing that we're still thinking about as the organization, planning for it, and hopefully in next few years we can achieve that goal. So on tournament side, countries are organizing national tournaments. The International Blind Tennis Association currently has been invited to the first tennis event at the IBSA World Games. IBSA World Games will be held in Birmingham, UK, this year in August. I think it's August 18th through the 27th. This is an amazing event for all tennis players who play competitively to be able to participate. As you know, the World Games, the IBSA World Games, occur are organized every 4 years. So think of it as the World Cup of sports for blind sports. So the tournament side starts, think of it as at national level or local level. You have a local, each country is depend on maturity level and the governance and how close they work with their tennis federations. They have local tournaments. The program is tied to that local tournament, and they can move if they're working with the tennis federation, working with the, a different national tournament or state tournament. For example, in Australia, they have state tournaments as well. And basically, it culminates into a national championship. After that, most of those players that are highly or top players, they make it to the international tournament. Usually occurs once a year. This year, because of post-COVID, we chose to be part of the IPSA World Games, since they only occur every 4 years. It's a great opportunity to have players from all over the world and athletes from all over the world to meet there in August this year.
Wow, very cool. That's definitely, being part of that event, like you said, is a great way to showcase the sport, and I'm sure.
Well, showcasing the sport, I think it's critical, because think of what other sports are doing to grow the game, right? To grow their sport. And I believe that programs, in order for them to be successful, they need support from their national governing body of tennis. They can do well. Don't get me wrong. A lot of them started that way. But the important thing is that the governing body is involved because the mission is pretty much the same, right? It's just we're focused, in our case, some blind tennis associations are focused on only the blind visually impaired tennis. But, the mission of growing, promoting the sport of tennis is pretty much the mission of every tennis federation worldwide, right?
Sure.
So in the U.S., for example, just last month in February, the United States Tennis Association organized their first blind and visually impaired education conference and friendly tournament as well. So, it's been an amazing conference where also the USPTA was organizing their first friendly tournament. They had players coming, about 8 top players coming from all over the world, pretty much think of it as an exhibition as well, because they had players in the U.S. that never been exposed to competition before. And it was just an amazing experience for the players, but also a great opportunity to exchange amongst, the organizations involved, IBTA, USBTA, and USTA, and even others. So I foresee this organization, this conference, to grow and to be really a destination for adaptive tennis, especially on the education front as well, in addition to the tournament side.
Sure. And just once again, kind of raising awareness about, how the sport is played, obviously. And like you said, the education aspect of educating others on, I'm sure, coaching the sport and just in general, that grassroots effort.
Absolutely. The coaching is so critical, right? Because without coaches, then you can't train the players or coach the players. And coaches are a very important part of the whole equation. And other organizations like the Professional Tennis Registry, which is the certification body for its international certification body for coaches, and the UST as well. We definitely seeking to collaborate in this space, because I think adaptive tennis in general is growing and targeting each population is in need to help them participate in tennis. But in particular, blind and low vision tennis, or blind or visually impaired tennis, has a need for coaches who understand the sport and who are willing to learn. And it's not very difficult, obviously. It's just it's not, think of it as something that is new that you want to expand as a coach and learn. And it's so rewarding to see the progress of your students, of your players, of your athletes, when they become, good to play internationally.
Right. Absolutely. I am curious about, I know you mentioned the USTA, the United States Tennis Association, other governing bodies, or even like professional tennis players. Can you talk a little more about kind of the support of those organizations, or if any tennis players have kind of jumped on board or showed any kind of interest in blind tennis?
Yeah, so it varies from each country to country, as you know. So some countries, as I mentioned before, they're kind of a part of the pathway that's set by and developed by the national governing body for tennis, right?
Sure. So,
other countries, they have maybe a smaller program, but very popular program, right? Where, you know, they're addressing a need, and you have people who are willing to lead that effort, and they love the sport, they love the tennis, they love to give back, and they basically start from scratch and do anything they can to grow the game. So the support is so critical, in my opinion, for the growth of the sport of these national tennis federations, and also eventually the International Tennis Federation, because I think without that, in fact, our goal is to be aligned with the International Tennis Federation, because they're doing already that work for other sports and other adaptive tennis, right? Mm-hmm. So we're working, it's kind of an interesting kind of structure, but because there's a need, specific need in each country, it's very hard to do everything at once. And it's okay, it's understandable. You know, wheelchair took a while, many years to grow internationally. And other sports, I think it's going to be the same. It will take some time, but I think it will grow. But I truly believe that without the support of the tennis federations, the blind tennis associations, if you will take them a lot longer to get to where they want. And I think in the case of the U.S. Tennis Association, I'm part of the Adaptive Tennis Committee of the USTA. Our goal is to grow adaptive tennis in general. And we as an organization, provide support to all adaptive tennis, right? So the concept is not new, really. We noticed as the International Blind Tennis Association have been around for the last 10 years or so, we noticed the countries that got partnerships early with their governing body, for example, got a chance to be part of the pathway, you know, basically moving from social to local tournament to high performance, which is the competition, is critical for that growth. The when we saw genuine interest in actually reaching out to the blind, low vision population and providing opportunity for them to participate in tennis, we noticed a change in their health, in their mental health, in their physical health. They become actually independent. They would come take public transportation, because a lot of, as you know, blind, low vision people need support workers or carers to help. We noticed a lot of people really focus on independence. Very, very important, I think, that area to make sure that, and they want to be there, they want to go there, they want to participate. And also, I think they have an opportunity to socialize with other who have the same interests. And I think that's what sport is about as well, is to make friends, to build relationships, and at the same time, practice a sport that makes you healthy physically and mental. So let's call it this way, the acceleration for that, we notice all the countries that have that relationship with their national tennis governing body was a lot faster than any other countries that don't.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And yeah, just in general, very well said about the benefits of adaptive sports. And, you know, I've had a lot of guests on that have echoed the same thing about the independence that, participating in adaptive sports can bring to someone. And obviously the camaraderie, just building those friendships, those relationships, so many benefits to being involved.
Absolutely. And, you know, let's, for example, just in the U.S., let's take the U.S., some facts about the U.S. You know, we have about 61 million adults with disabilities. What, 12 million Americans, I think 40 over, based on, I think, the latest CDC statistics, have vision disabilities. They're, you know, so 12 million Americans, 40 and over, and 81% of people with blindness or moderate or severe visual disability are over 50 years old. Now, you look at that number of people, and as a country in the U.S., and you say, what can I do as an organization to help get them involved in our sport? And it could be any sport, in fact. It doesn't have to be just tennis.
Sure.
Right? So to me, is what do I do? What am I doing as an organization to make my sport accessible to all? And I think that's where that's why the IBTA's mission is so important for us, is we want to provide that opportunity to everybody worldwide and work with partners and partner with organizations who have that same goal and same mission. It's been really rewarding to see, again, many players, athletes, their families, children who discover tennis, and were very, and the parents were even doubting. They were doubting whether they could play sports at some point. And all of a sudden they bloom. They literally bloom.
Right.
So we've seen it over and over. So I think, again, sports in general is still, in my opinion, not very accessible to all. And I think that I think a lot of organizations need to do more. And having worked with governing bodies of tennis before, I know a lot can be done. And one of the leading organizations is Tennis Australia. They identified the need of the population. They're having a program for 25 years, in fact, for deaf and hard of hearings and for other segments of the population that have disabilities. But they really felt that they needed to do more, in fact, in the blind and tennis, in the blind tennis event side, if you will. And the first adult exhibition was organized by a Grand Slam, was at the Australian Open this year in 2023.
Oh, wow.
In Melbourne. So I think other organizations will follow suit. I know the USTA is going to be one of the leaders in this space because it's one of their priorities as well. And the priorities of the USTA president, Dr. Brian Hanline. So I think a lot of people are going to make some great changes and influence the growth of adaptive tennis in general, not just blind and low vision tennis or blind visually impaired tennis.
Absolutely. Definitely exciting things to come, I think. And kind of on that note, if someone listening to this is interested in getting involved in blind tennis or at least learning more about it, whether it is an individual or even an adaptive sports organization that might want to try to offer, you know, some type of blind tennis event, whatnot, what kind of advice would you give for that individual?
I would say for the U.S. opportunities or opportunities in the U.S., the best thing is to go to USTA.com and then just type in adaptive tennis, search adaptive tennis, and you'll find a list of programs on the USTA.com site. The other thing is the USBTA has a page, which is the U.S. Blind Tennis Association, also on the USTA.com site. It's playtennis.usta.com/USBTA. So again, playtennis.usta.com/USBTA. That's the USTA Blind Tennis Association. And I think you'll find a lot of information there. You'll find a lot of contacts, information. This is to be involved in the US. Internationally, you go to ibtatennis.org, IBTA for short, tennis. So ibtatennis.org. And there's a lot of information there that's available. The other thing that if you need help, people can email info@internationalblindtennis.org. So info at internationalblindtennis.org, and we can provide as much information as we can to them. But I think the best way to reach out probably would be through the USTA.com site and the USPTA site, which is basically US for US players and US people who are interested in the sport.
Right. Excellent. And I'll definitely include links to all that information in the show notes for everyone as well.
Thank you for doing that. Appreciate, Greg, what you're doing, because I think your show is very important for the blind and low vision community who wants to get involved in sports in general. This is important, and I hope we'll see more people involved in tennis. There's support coming their way as well to be involved. Like I said, our USPTA president, Dana Costa, here in the U.S., has founded the organization for that purpose. And the USTA is also providing support across the country.
Sure, sure. And I know also you and I had chatted about potentially getting some, you know, blind tennis players on the podcast. So definitely stay tuned for that. Would love to chat with some individuals, you know, very experienced as well.
Absolutely. I think there are many that would love to share their stories with you and with your audience as well. I think it'd be great to hear it directly from them.
Definitely. Okay, so again, we've been visiting with Samir Mahir, who is president of the IBTA. Again, stands for the International Blind Tennis Association. And Samir, thank you so much for your time and certainly everything you're doing on your front and the IBTA in general. And really excited to follow kind of the journey and, you know, increased growth and opportunities of blind tennis.
Well, thank you, Greg. Appreciate the opportunity, and keep up the great work. Again, we love what you're doing.
Thank you. Really appreciate that. Be sure to follow the Eyes Free Sports podcast at facebook.com/eyesfreesports and on Twitter @eyesfreesports.